Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On Friday, October 24th, the Norris Group proudly presents its 7th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts will join Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event could not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Auction.com, HousingWire, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. For event information, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Dave Cogdill. Dave is a former senator who is now president and CEO of the California Building Industry Association, a position he has served since 2013 prior to serving on its board. Dave was the county assessor for Stanislaus from 2011 to 2013. He also served as a commissioner on the California Water Commission and as the chairman for the Maddie Institute at Fresno State University after departing from legislature. During his years in office, Dave worked a lot with leaders to resolve issues relating to rural health care and education, and for his service, he has received several awards, including the prestigious Profiles and Courage Award from the John F. Kennedy Library Foundation. Dave, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
That's a very diverse background. I guess maybe the first question, since you're so familiar with water, is how does the drought affect the building industry? Are they concerned about going forward, it causing a problem?
Well, most definitely. Obviously, we have to have a dedicated source of water in order to receive the approvals necessary to build in this state. That's been the law now for some time. So a reliable water supply is as important, certainly, to our industry as any, and maybe in some cases even more so. So we're very pleased that we will be moving forward with a water bond on the November ballot, and we hope that the people of the state will support that. It's really rather historic in nature. It's been quite a while since people have had the opportunity to weigh in relating to the issue of water supply reliability. So this bond will provide about $7.5 billion that can then be leveraged probably three or four times in order to provide much needed infrastructure and hopefully substantially improve water supply reliability in this state.
If for some reason that didn't pass, and we didn't get more rain, I guess I just want to try and get an understanding of how serious this is. You certainly building contractors have projects that last for years, and so they right. spend a lot of money and their upfront costs and so forth, and now they start building, and all of a sudden, could the lack of water have basically stoppage of something that's already underway and approved due to lack of water?
Well, at times like this, you do certainly hear concerns relating to possible moratoriums, and that chatter, of course, increases as the drought becomes more and more severe. As we point out, the realities are relating to new housing stock compared to the existing housing stock. We create a very efficient product nowadays, if you compare it, especially with homes that were built prior to 1980. One of the frustrations as an industry that we have with the legislation that passed earlier this year to provide, I think, almost $750 million worth of quote-unquote drought relief, but there's very little in that bill that could actually provide folks with the incentives necessary to actually swap out their high-flow toilets and shower heads and the like, and it's a relatively cheap fix. You're probably looking at somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500 on the typical home to make those improvements, and again, we'd like to see some of that money used to incentivize those efforts would save probably close to 300 million acre feet a year, something like that. So it's a substantial improvement just by making sure that we're more water efficient in the existing housing stock.
In that same vein, are builders being able to incorporate green improvements in their new construction?
Well, they are. They do quite a bit of that, certainly. There are some attractive programs relating to solar energy, and there have been some pretty substantial rebates, tax credits offered by the federal government as a result of bringing California's requirements into the in line with the federal requirements that are making that more and more feasible. And I think the market for those products is growing, but in many cases it's still relatively limited. People like the idea of it, but they don't seem to be quite as enthusiastic about paying the increased price that might be associated with that type of construction.
We've heard that basically since the Great Recession, we've made up an equal number of jobs, both in California and the nation. How does that relate specifically, though, to the construction industry and in California specifically? We're still way behind the curve there?
Yes, we are substantially. I think the Department of Finance at the state level estimates that the average growth needed to provide the need for housing in the state is somewhere above 200,000 units a year. The projections earlier this year was that we would do about 100,000 in 2014, and now that's been revised down to about 85,000. So you can see we're still substantially below just what's needed to keep up with the projected demand. So you know, our industry is a long way from being back to where we were 5 or 6 years ago.
200,000 units, that's including apartments, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So single-family construction, though, is a very different number or percentage down from where it was. Is that, that would be accurate?
Yeah, actually, as it relates to the difference between the two, multifamily housing is actually a larger percentage than it has been historically. And again, I think it's due to a number of factors. Primarily, I think the inability of a lot of people to qualify to buy a home. Underwriting requirements have become more stringent following the recession. People are going back to work. The unemployment rate is dropping and has dropped, but the realities relating to real wage increases are quite bleak. Wages have been pretty stagnant. So with the increased price of providing a new home in the state due to the regulatory environment and other costs we face, it gets very difficult to provide an affordable product that you know, a large enough market can participate in.
Do you have quite a few projects that just are not financially viable, like in areas like Riverside County and San Bernardino?
Well, we have, again, more than we would certainly expect to see in any normal environment. Not as bad, again, as it was at the height of the recession. But in many areas of the state, primarily the inland areas, the Central Valley, Sacramento Valley, and portions of Southern California, it becomes, again, very difficult to provide an affordable product. You know, the areas along the coasts and some of the more higher dollar areas of the state, there it's all about having something available to market. It's not as price sensitive, certainly, but if you've got the product, you can probably sell it. So they're much less susceptible to any unanticipated increase in costs and the impact of that on feasibility.
At the end of 2013, looking into 2014 and the projections, have we lived up to the projections, or is it not as good as we thought it would be?
No, like I said, I think they had estimated we'd be around 100,000 units this year, and we're down closer to 85, I think, is the adjusted projection.
Is that okay? Is that because there's a lack of sales? Is that basically saying that they just hadn't sold?
No, I think that's actually permit
okay.
information. So it's obviously they go hand in hand, but my permits are down over what they were anticipated to be.
Okay. Unsold inventory, is that is still at a pretty mild level when not feeling unsafe?
Again, you know, most we're in the you know, back to that mode where we're building as we sell type of thing. There's not a lot of spec building going on, so you don't really have that inventory issue. They build a home after they've sold it, so it's there's not a lot of standing inventory of completed homes. I would argue new homes.
Okay. Has the target buyer changed? If I was building new homes in, say, 2003 or 4, I might really be leaning toward the first-time buyer. And is the target buyer changed in for 2014?
Well, not what was the first year? I'm sorry.
Well, just in other words, in a normal market, you probably have a fair amount of homes bought by first-time buyers.
Right.
Is that still true?
Yeah. Not, I don't think, in the same percentages that that has been historically. We're finding that the millennial generation seems to be renting longer, are more interested in the more urban housing offerings within larger cities, that kind of thing. But again, I think that a lot of that demographic we feel is a result of the fact that people are marrying it later and later in life and deciding to have families later in life. But once they do that, then they you know, are in the market and become interested in the you know, product that's more along the lines of the detached single family residence. So really it's I think the jury is still out as it relates to what it means long term for trends in housing. But right now, it's one of the reasons that and the economic factors that we discussed why you're seeing more development of multifamily rental housing versus condominiums or other types of non-detached single-family residential.
It's hard to project that, too, because if you looked at every other generation, they really haven't acted the same way. They didn't shrug at home ownership like this millennial generation has.
No, that's very true.
So that doesn't make it easy to be in your business if things have changed. The other thing that's changed is the household makeup themselves. There's a lot of people that are single with one income that would have to qualify on their own to buy something, and that hasn't always been true.
That's true.
So
the other side of that is we're finding, you know, more multi-generational buyers where you'll have you know, maybe three generations in the same household. There's more of that than there's been in the past.
Yeah, we just went into a new housing tract in Riverside, and they had that exact thing. They had that set aside where you had the grandmother's suite.
Right.
And that's not something you would have seen in the early 2000s. That's definitely a new product.
Right.
Do you get the sense that the financing world is going to become, I guess, easier to get people qualified going forward than it has been in the last couple of years?
Well, I think that's, you know, certainly history teaches us that. We go through these cycles where credit gets very tight and then it loosens up as a reflection, I think, of increased market demand and the economics behind all of that. I think you have to continue to hope that they learn lessons from the previous cycle. There's been many cases over history where it appears that we haven't done that, and that the pendulum won't swing too far. They certainly, I think, need to be a little bit looser than they are now, if that's the right term. I think it's just this scenario that seems to develop after we've gone down or through a major downturn where credit gets very tight. But a lot of those, you know, a lot of the folks that are out there now that, you know, went through a bankruptcy or a short sale, foreclosure, what have you, a lot of them have now cured their credit or will be curing it within the next year or two, and they really become, in the eyes of an underwriter, a new buyer at that point. And if they've cured their credit sufficiently, obviously they then can participate, and you know, that's a good thing from the standpoint of the market and the ability to provide and sell homes.
In my area in Riverside, one of the things that's been detrimental, I think, to builders is the lowering of the FHA loan limits. At Riverside went from $500,000 to $350,000, and that numbers makes it pretty tough to build a very large home in Riverside. So I know that the builders have had a lot easier time selling under $350,000 than they have anything over $350,000.
Right.
I guess my question is, typically, FHA loan limits are a lower ratio to Fannie Freddie than they are, even are now. So is it your sense that it's headed downward from here?
It being the
FHA loan limits. In other words, that was the first reduction, but...
Right. Yeah, I mean, your guess is as good as mine, I think, on that. But overall, I think we're going to start seeing more in the way of a loosening of these limits and lending requirements than a further tightening. Again, as the economy does get better, more people go back to work, and you know, as we start to see wages come back up, then I think you'll see you know, those limits start to raise again, and overall underwriting requirements get a little bit more lenient.
When you have a decline in building like we have from where we were doing tons of construction in 2006, and there's this type of, you know, many years of a downturn, do we have skilled labor problems to where we don't have all the skilled labor at our beck and call? They've moved somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that's a real concern, certainly in many parts of the state where the industry went so far down as to be literally decimated for years on end. Those folks didn't have a lot of options other than to move somewhere to find work. And so, but again, they're really not coming back at the level that many of the high dollar areas like the Bay Area or, you know, along the coast of Southern California are. But certainly in the areas like the Central Valley and Inland Empire, I would argue it's probably more difficult now to find skilled labor than it once was.
Does a new home market have any great participation from foreign investors?
Not to a great extent right now. There is certainly a level of interest out there. I've just recently interviewed with a company from Japan who's interested in our housing market in California and possibly becoming an investor in that area. There's some large developments I know in the Bay Area, one particularly in Oakland that's planned that will actually involve Chinese investors. So that interest seems to be, again, picking up with the overall recovery of the market, and I think we can probably expect to see even more of that.
One of the interesting things about the Chinese, I had to speak in front of an audience of Chinese investors, and after it got to the Q&A part, the gentleman mentioned to me he just bought a home in Northern California 2 years ago, went for $1 million. Now it's worth $2 million, and he was going to hold it till it was $7 million. Mm-hmm. And I just mentally, I thought, well, that's a lot to expect. But yep. I didn't have the context that he did. If you own something in Beijing, and I recently just found this out because I had somebody I know sell three properties, they went up a percentage of 1,500% inside of 4 years.
Wow.
When you bring, he invested $50,000 in two different homes. They sold for $500,000 apiece, and he invested $100,000 and sold for $2 million. When you walk that money into California, I'm not buying that you just want a safe haven for it. You're looking for a replication of that. And that's
right.
That's interesting that mentality exists in that area. So, you know, in an area like San Jose, where you've already peaked past 2007 prices, part of it is on the backs of very happy money that isn't local.
That's right.
Do cash buyers come into play a lot for new homes?
I think they are more now than maybe they have certainly in the past. And again, goes back to what we were talking about with the underwriting requirements, the difficulty in getting a loan, even with pretty good credit. And you've got a lot of folks that I know in certain niche areas, certainly when you're looking at the baby boomer demographic and moving the way it has and the way it is as it relates now to more downsizing or, you know, situations where many times they're selling the larger home in an area where the values have increased substantially during their time of ownership, and in many cases they're moving to more urban or more rural areas, I guess you'd say, more suburban areas where they can buy, you know, twice the home for a fraction of what they sold the home in the Bay Area or in certain parts of Southern California. Bank the rest, retire early, and you know, have greatly increased the quality of their life from the standpoint of their living conditions. So I do think you're seeing more of that, and that is reflected in a lot of the cash buying that's going on.
Is there any study that's taken a look at that senior saying they're actually leaving the state of California to avoid taxation?
I know there has been. I can't quote it or quote any of them at you know, right now, but I think we've all certainly seen that over the years. I know I'm in that demographic, and an awful lot of the people that I talk to, you know, you hear that comment a lot about, you know, I moved to Nevada, it's an automatic 10% increase in my annual income type of thing. But as far as the actual numbers of people doing that, I haven't seen anything recently on that.
The California business climate, I think if I look at almost any report, we're 49th out of 50. I don't know where the 50th
right.
is, but we're not doing anybody any favors. How does that impact the building industry, if it does at all?
Well, it does certainly from the standpoint of the unemployment rate and the availability of good-paying jobs that can afford a mortgage on the average home or the move-up product. So, and again, I think it's as it relates to that whole environment of higher unemployment rates and again low wages that have been pretty stagnant now for several years. That's really probably the biggest impact on the ability of this market to function the way it once did, or the way we'd certainly like to see it again. So it's a major issue, I would argue.
Yeah, it's when you look at, if you want to play political games, you can say, you know, everything's back to, you know, like we have all the jobs, but the trouble is they're 30 hours, not 40, and they don't pay as well.
Yep. That's right.
And so a lender can't give you a yes answer when before they could.
Right.
Well, Dave, we're almost out of time. I want to thank you for joining us and look forward to you being a participant on our panel, because get to discuss some things with peers from all different walks from the real estate world, and it'll be a great night.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to that also. Thanks for inviting me.
All right, Dave. Thanks a lot for taking your time today.
Surely.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Coldwell Banker Town & Country, Elite Auctions, In A Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, LA South REIA, Lavis Associates, Pilot Limousine, Primary Residential Mortgage, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Sonica Corporation, South Point Companies, Spinnaker Loans, Tony Alvarez, UDirect IRA Services, and the Council of Multiple Listing Services. See isurvivedrealestate.com for video of the live event and more on our sponsors.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.